Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, everybody, on this wintry day here in Colorado, Chuck and Julie Show, Chuck Miles, Julie Hayden, Two Straight Up, brought to you by
AmericanCitizenPress.com and Denver Center Gen X and Dr. Julie McCallan. You know, actually, we probably shouldn't complain if it's like 53 degrees out.
I know.
It's not that bad. But we've gotten kind of spoiled with this fall. It's like, oh my God, it's winter. It's like 50 degrees. I think Rev hasn't worn his jacket to school. Like, I send it with him, but he doesn't wear it. Hey, we've got John Conlon coming up as soon as we get him. He's a columnist. We've had him on before with AM Greatness. And as I said, basically, I'm reading his column, and it's like, this is why, pardon my language here, but government sucks, and it's doomed to
always
suck. Yeah, which is, and what we need to do about it. Also, there's a ton of stuff going on today. The Smollett case has gone to the jury.
That'll be an interesting verdict.
Yeah, you'll be interested to know that actually the leader of the BLM says that it's just a white supremacist charade, crooked white supremacist charade. Everything's right. White supremacist. Right. We've got Hillary Clinton, just won't go away. She's back. And we'll play her latest thing. All kinds of stuff. Hispanic, a poll of Hispanic people, not going to make Democrats happy.
If they lose Hispanics, they're in trouble.
Right. And then one other thing, if we have time, I want to talk about is the Great Resignation. Job of 4.2 million people, the third highest ever, just behind August and September. People quit their jobs in October. I'm like, what are these people? I need to figure out. I need to find them. If you're one of those people, call me and tell me how you're making a living. And because if I quit all of the work that we do, all I do is shop all day, which would then lead us to need a job. So I don't know what these people are doing. It's just a curious
thing.
Well,
we've got John Conlon with us on line three. Tell us about John, Julie.
Yeah. Hey, John, he's a great columnist, writes about a lot of organizational stuff, politics, has a great column up in AM Greatness right now, which he was kind enough to send me a link to. So, hey, John, thanks once again. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Chuck and Julie.
So, like I said, I've been kind of promoting this as John Conlon explains why government sucks and why it's always going to suck. So when I read it, I'm like, this is brilliant. I mean, it absolutely explains it. And it's the kind of stuff Chuck has said, too. But why don't you sort of explain the premise of your column?
Well, sure. In my management consulting, when I was consulting in for-profit businesses, I just observed what I ended up calling a de-evolution of organizations. And those are situations where we have a bad boss or a bad manager. And basically, good employees, and I'm not talking moral issues, I'm talking just what makes a good employee, always go find another job, right? So they have, there's only a certain amount of crap they have to put up with. And over time in an organization like that, if those people leave, you're left with all those who either aren't motivated enough to try to find another job, who truly can't find another job. So then when it comes times are tough and we need to really, all hands on deck type situation, you look around and you just don't have the players to do that. And if you look at government, government, which is just a big nonprofit organization, these same forces fill them, but at least in a for-profit business, sooner or later you have to make money. You have to respond to customers, whereas government doesn't have any of those sculpting forces. So basically, bad bosses stick around. They create other bad bosses, which just spreads throughout an organization. And pretty soon, you have a pervasive rot from top to bottom. And in the article, I start with talking about, at least maybe I was naive 10 years ago. But I used to think that the FBI and the CIA and, the Justice Department, that these were, a cut above, that these were quality organizations. But as we discovered in the past few years, the rot is pervasive there, and sadly, it probably goes top to bottom. Not saying every employee by any means, but
pretty much everyone.
Well, you know, and one thing too, you also mentioned the column that I thought was great is you said essentially a government, and actually any organization, but a government is kind of like a living organism, right? Where it's created, and then what it does is it fights to survive, it seeks to grow, and essentially it seeks to destroy anything that threatens those two things. And I thought, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what happens to government and bureaucracies. They're created, and then all the first thing they want to do is they want to grow.
The sad thing is, it almost doesn't matter who, you know, is manning the organization. Some, it might grow faster than in others, but it's still, the tendency is still for it to grow. And unless there's a conscious effort to prune it back, it will over time continue to grow. And if you look at the federal government, state government, local government, over the past 100 and some years, you say, that's exactly what it's done.
Right.
Yeah, it has. And I have 3 general rules, having worked in government and worked in private sector. One is that in government, certainly the mathematical equation is you take the number of employees, take the square root, say you have 100 employees, square root's 10, and they do 50% of the work. The other 90% do the remaining 50% of the work. And that's if you're lucky. That's if you're lucky. And therefore, I mean, I've gone into cities and I've cut the workforce in half with absolutely no difference in output for the citizens they're supposed to be serving. The second was, once you hire somebody at a governmental level, their first job appears to be to create a sub position where that they hire somebody to do all the work you're supposed to do, and they go all the way down. And third, it's basically a virus. I mean, they get a hold of the government and they eventually kill it. Now, I'm talking hundreds of years. Chinese history, you can just go through all the dynasties and watch the bureaucracy slowly choke the politic down, so it's so awful that there's a revolution and the parties are upset. But it's just, if you've ever been in government, let's say there is, I can think of one city right now, that's in a real cash crunch. Now, what happens in private business is that the persons want to make money, and therefore they cut their least productive workers.
Right.
The ones they can, you know, get rid of with the greatest amount of ease and without hurting the organization. In public entities, everything is sacrificed to retain all employees. Only at the last do they shed employees. And so these things just grow and grow and grow. And finally, they take over the body politic and kill it. But that often takes hundreds of years, even 1,000 years sometimes. You know, the Confucian Mandarin classes, you know, ruled for hundreds and hundreds of years before they finally choked it to death. And I think your article was great, saying for about 125 years, we had a pretty small government because we had a constitution that mandated that. But since the Progressive Era, this monster is growing and growing and
growing. It leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
It is, and I think you describe it perfectly, Chuck. And it leads to catastrophic failure. And my point is, we as free citizens, with supposedly a representative government, do not have to sit back and say, yep, it's just going to go until it all blows up, and society's going to go to hell, and we'll have hundreds of millions of people die, and, you know, perhaps World War III. I mean, bad things happen with catastrophic failure. So it makes more sense to just, you know, that was my purpose of my article, is to analyze the situation, understand it's somewhat the nature of the beast, and the best defense for that is to limit its scope and power dramatically, because the forces we can't do much about. You know, I mean, there's only so much greatness we're going to get out of a nonprofit organization like government. I mean,
right.
That's just the way it is.
Well, and like I said, I thought it was really well put the way you compared it to an amoeba, for Pete's sakes, any kind of living organism, right? It's going to fight for its survival. It's going to try to destroy anything that threatens its survival. And most of all, it wants to grow. And I think you look at what happened with Donald Trump, and that's exactly what happened. You had, I mean, I would argue that the more than government, it was the entire swamp apparatus. But you've got some guy comes in who actually seems to be serious about doing what you suggest, and that's cutting back powers and regulations, and immediately everything gears up, all of them, even though they maybe some Republican senators like Lindsey Graham maybe didn't get along with whatever before. But when all of a sudden their whole swampness is threatened and the bureaucracies are threatened, they all acted together viciously to try to destroy Donald Trump and the rest of us who voted for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like you said, the organization fights to survive. And, you know, I'm certain Chuck would agree with this. It's one of the painful things of, you know, trying to vote Republican or conservative. And you look at the federal government, and half the time there's a Republican in charge, the government grows faster than when there's a Democrat in charge.
Yes. Because at least Republicans, when they're not in office, sort of act like Republicans. And
right.
But once they're in office, they're just part of the amoeba. And they keep on growing. I mean, Ronald Reagan really came in on a whole mantra of government's the problem. We've got to cut back government. We've got to do it. He was wholly unsuccessful. I mean, Tom Tancredo was one of his ones, and he tried to get rid of people in the Department of Education, and it couldn't be done. It just couldn't be done. And so government just maybe didn't grow as fast, but it grew, kept on growing. If you got H.W. Bush, I mean, his and the Patriot Act and all that.
Homeland Security.
Massive explosion of government. And what are you going to do with? They have 38,000 FBI employees. What do you do with all those people? You investigate mothers.
You investigate mothers.
You go down and somebody has a pull string that looks a little bit like a noose. So you send 18 members of the FBI for a full investigation of a pull cord. I mean, they have nothing to do. And so they have to invent things. They have to invent.
I talk to anyone that lives in a small town, when the fire department gets overstaffed or the police department gets overstaffed, like you said, they have to go justify their existence. And they will. And they'll use the power of government to expand it. And like I said, it's the nature of the beast. There's little that we can do about that. So the only thing we can do is try to take back the schools and teach the children, again, get back to a small, limited government. And it almost doesn't matter on which side of the political spectrum you have, because it still is a path that leads to catastrophic destruction. And that type of failure is not going to really care whether you voted R or D or anything else when it comes.
Well, and I think what we're seeing now with like the mask mandate, right? I mean, this virus became like a perfect way for them to exploit fear, because people were scared, right? And when people exploit, but you can exploit fear, then, you know, it's easier to manipulate people. And all of us said, no, we have all these rules and regulations that aren't even really rules and regulations that we're following. It's not legal. I mean, to a certain extent, at least the courts are standing up a little bit with some of the vaccine mandates. But I think it's become a perfect thing. And then what they've done is, because they realize, I think you're right, they're threatened. Their survival is threatened. And so now they start starting to, you know, again, they're having the FBI go after Sharona Bishop for standing up for parental rights. You see them cracking down. You've got the big tech companies. I saw the number one Twitter account covering the Maxwell trial was suspended by Twitter for violating its policies. It's like, what? I mean, it's just, they've gone crazy. And I wonder if that leads us then basically to what your point is, and Chuck's point is too, is, yeah, some sort of catastrophic, and I don't even really know what I mean by that, but they're not going to just give it up on their own. Twitter's not going to say, oh, you know, it's probably wrong of us to censor.
Well, just watch Afghanistan. The Afghanistan war was an enormous money tree. The amount of money made by U.S. contractors, by U.S. defense agencies and everyone else, and it poured through Afghanistan, an incredibly poor country, in which billions poured through. And of course, every public servant or any other, you know, tied onto it. I mean, in many ways, it's a real tragedy for the Afghans. I mean, they were losing 20, 30,000 people a year, but you can stand that. But for all those billions to leave, and that's they just want to keep that money train going. And apparently, the Biden administration is at least throwing them money so that they'll release whatever Americans are left. So, but that was a money tree where people, all kinds of people made it, and particularly the government, you know, the army, they all wanted it. And when Trump first threatened it, they quickly went to New York Times with their phony Russian bounty story. The Russians were giving bounties for American soldiers, which stopped the withdrawal. I think
you put your finger on it. It's the forever war aspect of things, yeah. too. So whether it's a true war like that one, or for the ever war on drugs, or on, you know, fighting poverty, or for education, forever wars are just words for saps like us. That they're going to continue to pick our pockets.
Yes.
Well, where do we go from here? Because again, to carry out the organism analogy, it's kind of like, so if you're like a deer and you get rid of all the natural predators and successfully fight for your survival, pretty soon though, there's not enough grass or whatever for you to eat, and then that does lead to your own destruction. Yeah, as you go. I mean, at a certain point, like you were saying, Chuck, historically, it seems like this must be why essentially the governments inevitably collapse under the weight of their own bloatedness, really.
Well, and because they don't understand how the system works, they tinker with stuff. And, you know, it's just like this, the idea that we can just continue printing money forever and it's never going to have a negative impact. I mean, that's an insane belief, but that's how we live. You know, what is it? Social Security has, 20 years before it's broke? There, you know, 300 million? Hundreds of millions of Americans depend on programs that are not funded for 20 years. I mean, you know, when you add up all the unfunded liabilities of the country, we're living in fantasy land. So, if you look at the growth of government in the past 100 and some years, just from, you know, when the federal income tax started, I'm a business guy. Project that out. Continue those trend lines out, and Chuck's catastrophe is out there, and it's not that far away. And once it happens, you know, breaking things is a hell of a lot easier than building new things. So,
well, this is from Dr. Donna. It helps having more printed when playing Monopoly. And Mark says, fire each and every one of them and start again. And then this Dr. Donna also, since it's the schools that created ignorance to truth for many. And back to the schools, the point there is, I think you're right, because let's go back to another point you made in your column. We're talking with John Conlon, has a great column in AM Greatness. You pointed out that the founding fathers and mothers of this country were brilliant in that they realized the only way to prevent this was to really limit the power and the scope of government, which ever since they did that, it's been growing. And you have to get back, like you said, to people who understand that, because the government itself, once you get in, you're never going to do that. But do you think, is there time or is there ability or even a will to do that? Or are they going to, I fear what they want to do is take what's going on here and they just want to create this giant global. I mean, if I'm the organism, I just want to take over the whole world, basically, for, like real, not even a joke.
It does seem to be that's the direction, but you know, I always look at that and say, unless you kind of throw away representative government, that concept doesn't work very well, because sooner or later, a charlatan will come along. We'll get our own Hugo Chavez. In my opinion, Obama was close to Hugo Chavez, but he didn't achieve it. And then once you get a person like that in, I also note in the article that bosses fill organizations with people like them. So, as the Soviet Union was eroding, all the Soviet generals were crooks. They all were. They surrounded themselves with crooks. If I'm a business guy and I like to grab the secretaries, I'm certainly not going to hire people that are offended by that. If I lie and cheat, I'm going to hire people that's acceptable for. So the rot really does spread.
Yes. So what do we do? I mean, I guess we have shows like this and columns like yours, because on one hand, you write about education, but it seems to me that you're asking the organism to fight itself in doing that, right? If you're the teachers and the teachers' unions, you want more power, you know, you want the FBI.
Well, I think you have to get rid of government schools. You don't have to get rid of public education. I'm a fan of public education. But I think the concept of public education has to be delivered only through government schools, once again, is a bad model. It's a false model. The model of freedom, which has improved every good and service in the planet, has never failed. It won't fail in education either. That's what we have to do for education.
So basically, can have it be public so everyone has access to it.
Right, which basically is give the parents control to spend, to allocate the money how they see fit in some type of state-regulated environment, of course, and let the marketplace do its wonders. And that would be good for probably 80% of all teachers out there. It would be good for 100% of all students and parents out there. And it will transform the education system so that we can get out of this this government thinking, because you're right, Julie, that, you know, these are government schools. They're not going to turn on themselves and say, oh, gee, the problem is government is a terrible thing. I think it was just, this week, the Wall Street Journal had a little blurb how basically every dollar spent in education, or 80% of every dollar spent in education, goes to payroll. And it really goes, a lot of it goes to pensions, not directly to payroll.
Well, yeah, well, exactly. You know, look at PARA in Colorado. Here, let me read some comments. We get a ton of comments. This is from Mark. He says, Chuck, I like your square root formula for how many government workers actually do what they're being paid to do. So that means, and Mark has experience with CDOT, with about 3,000 employees, there are only 55 that are actually working. Seems about right.
I would agree with that. I think that's probably right.
And then Dr. Donna talks about, why does the state have to regulate? That is an honest question. You're right. You know, and then, and you know, the more regulations, well, I mean, that's part of the organism's mechanism for growing. If you have more regulations, well, now you need more people to enforce those regulations. So you have to hire more people, but now you've got all these people, so they have to have something to do. So you need more regulations, right? And,
well,
you know,
even in a regulatory world, I have experience in the beverage alcohol regulatory world. And the United States has one of the most dynamic beer, wine, and spirits industries in the world. You know, go walk in any bar, any restaurant, and you will be overwhelmed by the options you have. So you can have effective regulation. It's just effective regulation. Once again, I'm a business and system guy. The way to have effective regulation is, one, it should be minimal. But two, it should be the regulations are the boundaries. They don't tell you what to do. They tell you what you can't do, somewhat like our Constitution. And that sets a boundary, and it basically says, hey, stay inside of those boundaries, and we don't give a damn what you do. You know, go out there and make it work. And that unleashes the genius of millions.
That's really a good way to put it, that use the regulation to tell you what you cannot do, not what you have to do. Years ago, we did a story on our show. We talked about some of the daycare regulations, where they were going as far as to regulate the kind of crayons. They had to have diversity in the crayons that they use. I mean, and that changed constantly. And we would talk to, because Rev, when he was little, we had him in daycare, and they're like, it's killing us. You know, I mean, we have to have a whole separate staff set up to figure out what the regulations are. And are we complying with them? And then somebody sends somebody here to inspect us. And keep in mind, we're dealing with a bunch of 2 and 3 year olds, you know, who don't understand the regulations. And I mean, it's little things like that.
Well,
those
get big. I mean,
it's a little thing, but you're right. It's like you start telling you, well, you have to have this color crayon, then you have to have this and then that. Yeah, why not just say, you can't have poison crayons or something like that? And simple.
Well, it's, once again, the system design drives everything. The reason the United States has been such an successful country, the most successful the world has ever seen, you know, it's not because of our natural resources. Those are fairly common. It's not because the people. We're a nation of mutts. People come here from all over the world and succeed. It's the system that allows that genius to happen. And that's the reason you haven't seen it succeed in other places because they haven't taken the system and used it. And whether it's regulation or government, we need to kind of get back to the basic design where the founders were genius. They understood tyranny. They understood people very, very well. And we need to start building proper systems, you know, not doing things like the present Democrat bills, the Build Back Better, you know. We're gonna say it only costs like 3 years, but we're gonna tax you for 10, and somehow that's supposed to work out, you know, 30, 50 years down the road. No, it won't. That's insane.
Well, and you know, and the thing is, too, what they have on their side now is people are so cynical. And I think people do not see clearly the danger that, you know, it's like we're heading toward the waterfall here and we're going to go over sooner, I think, than we think, because people, I think everybody knows when they tell you, oh, we're not going to raise your taxes. You know, that's a lie. It's kind of like when, when your insurance
only
company
the wealthy
says,
oh yeah, you're wealthy.
Yeah. Well, your insurance, yeah, exactly. You sign up for insurance. You're like, oh, yeah, we don't cover that, though.
Yeah,
I mean, you know
we
that.
We don't cover accidents.
You know that, but I think, you know, all of us, people are busy going on with their own life.
I don't see how we can, I've never, is there any example in the history of mankind where an government organization has managed to throttle back and go back to a simpler regulatory, simpler government system? I mean, I can't think of one.
Is there any hope? Any hope?
Well, I can't think of one ever that the system self-regulated or was forced
self-corrected.
Yeah, well, I don't know. A self-correction is not possible. That's whether it's public education or the government. When you look at it from an organizational standpoint, whether it's, you know, this living entity, self-correction is just not an option. It has to be forced on them. It has to be forced either through resource allocation. You know, you used to have $1,000, now you get $100. You know, figure it out. They'll still, of course, because it's government, they'll make the most painful choices first. Whereas in business or in our personal lives, you know, if you guys had to cut back, you wouldn't say, okay, I forget your kid's name, but, you know, we're cutting back on your diabetes medicine now because that's just
right. Yeah, yeah,
you know,
right.
You're going
to cut
back probably on less important things, whereas government does just the opposite, so they make the pain as great as possible to make no future cuts happen.
Well, that's why every time they have one of these government shutdowns, they'll go around closing all the
parks
and you can't get a passport and everything else so that, you know, you'll feel some pain. I was saying they could get rid of 90% of government and wouldn't make any difference. But they figure, oh, well, they like parks, so we'll
shut them down.
You can't go to the Vietnam Memorial. Yeah, we'll force you out of there. And that is how governments work. I mean, it's, you'd think that the people go, what do you mean you're closing the Vietnam Memorial? Why don't you just fire some employees? No,
can't do that.
No. I love that, using the examples you had, Chuck. Yes, open air places, they spent money to have people go fence them. So they spent more money to keep us out than just letting it be. But that's government.
Right. No, it's great. Let me read a couple more comments here, too. We've got, you know, and this is from Steven. In the Navy, we called civilian workers sand crabs, and we said you can't work with them and you can't fire them. From Ronald Reagan, this is from Leo. The most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. And this is from Jacob. On Monday, Just the News had an article about Fairfax County, Virginia, created a new fee for rain falling on the impervious area of one's property. I think they're a little bit behind the times. Well, let me jump, just a final question, at least for me, and then we'll let you go. How much time do you think we have? Again, I go back to my deer and you get rid of all the natural predators analogy. The government, I think we've reached this point where it's become so bloated, it's crushing all kinds of things. I mean, how long do you think we have before really, really, really bad stuff starts happening?
On one hand, I'm optimistic. I've seen organizations change. I've seen people change. It can be a quick thing. Surprisingly, what we're talking about are not physical things that we have to build or we have to. These are mental things that, you know, we can change people's minds tomorrow. So I think we need to continue to fight. And, you know, Wayne Gretzky one time, hockey great Wayne Gretzky, was asked one time what made him such a great hockey player. And he said he always skated to where the puck was going to be, not to where it is. And I think as a movement, we need to think about that. Yes, we have to, you know, fight in the trenches today, but our main focus needs to be on, okay, we got to get that puck going in this direction, and we need to be there when that puck gets there. And I think
there used to be an old saying in the airline business, but we're now flight attendants. Get there before you're thrown there. Airplane crashes. Yeah, it's really true.
Well, John, listen, thank you for your time.
Yeah, we appreciate it so
much. Where else can people read your writings?
Well, I've been doing a lot in American Greatness. They can search for my name, John Conlin, Conlin. My nonprofit is EICEnterprises.org. They can visit that. And, you know, we need to raise our voices. We need to do more of this. There was a picture, I think it was on the internet recently, of it looked like a bald eagle with its wings spread, and a prairie dog was standing up on its hind legs with its paws out, looks like it was going to fight it. And I guess they called him the ninja prairie dog. He attacked the bald eagle, and I was laughing to somebody about it and said, you know what, that's the way we need to be. That's the way life is. No matter what the odds, you never give up.
There you go. Thanks, John. Appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right. You too. John Conlin there. Yeah. I mean, it was just, I encourage you guys to go find it. It's at amgreatness.com. And I read it. I'm like, that's just so true. I mean, that's just a really interesting way of
build back better, the infrastructure deal. But it used to be infrastructure was good because you sort of needed it and you wouldn't want to build a bridge from nowhere. But then they changed the definition of infrastructure. So the infrastructure bill had 11% on worthless infrastructure.
Right.
And, you know, the Democratic Party is the biggest party of waste, fraud, and abuse that's ever been around.
Well, and this is from Steve. I haven't seen this. He says, see if you can watch a video called The Power of Zero. It's about the coming collapse because of our $28+ trillion debt and ongoing deficit spending. We will all become Venezuela. Yeah, that's, you know, as Dr. Donna says, ouch, you know, but that's absolutely true. Hey, and so speaking of things that can't, yeah, speaking of ouch, you want to shift gears. There's a little levity here, although it also has some serious aspects. So Hillary Clinton just refuses to go away. And I don't know if you guys have seen, but they're out there. Today is she was on an NBC streaming show where she read the 2016 victory speech she would have read if she had won the election. Now, I don't know, and we're going to play some of it. I don't know what is more pathetic, or even more disturbing, that Hillary Clinton, number one, is reading this and still carrying it around with her, or that NBC is actually putting this on TV.
Or the contents of the speech, none of which was about all the great things she could have done for the American public. It was all about how impressed her mother would have been ever.
Well,
I mean, that's really what she was thinking. You know, there's nothing, hey, I can accomplish this. She, you know, just so she could go to her dead mother and kind of go, I'm the president.
Well, and there was others. I mean, it'd been like, you know, like I've got three Emmys, but I've been nominated for more. It'd be like if I came down here and said, hey, guys, I'm going to read the speech I would have read had I actually won
Emmy I deserve.
It's like, who cares? It's like if not people care what you would have said if you got the Emmy, you would have got the Emmy. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But I want you to see this. So, Thomas, if we could please play the Clinton video.
This is great.
Because even though we had a lot of bumps those last 10 days.
A lot of bumps. FBI investigation.
You know, we could pull it out. So I worked on a speech that really was about my journey and had a real emphasis on my mother's life and journey as a way of, you know, making it clear that, yes, I would be the first woman president. But I like everybody, stood on the shoulders and lived the lives and the experiences of those who came before us. I dream of going up to her and sitting down next to her, taking her in my arms, and saying, look at me, listen to me. You will survive. You will have a good family of your own and three children. And as hard as it might be to imagine, your daughter will grow up and become the president of the United States.
NBC, are you kidding me?
Oh, God, that's so wonderful. I'm glad she was thinking about all the people she's going to rule over during this time period. It's all about her.
Hey, Mom,
look how important I am.
Well, and it's just ridiculous. It's like, I get, you know, she said she didn't write a concession speech. And I get why you wouldn't do that. You don't want to jinx yourself and you're hoping you don't have to read it. But I mean, okay, so that was 2016. This is 2021. Even Trump is gone now, right? It's Joe Biden is the president. Why is she still schlepping that around? I mean, that's pathetic in a way. It's narcissistic. But again, I don't even know which is worse. Her still carrying it around and stuff like that. Or NBC saying, oh, I know, let's give her a chance to read it. It's just ridiculous.
Well, they have something called Masterclass. And this is the thing. And they're going to have Bill, and Bill is also coming on for his own cryathon. But the other ones they're going to have on are the Bushes, George W. and his wife, and also you have Madeleine Albright and Rice. And
Susan
so just
Rice.
Susan, no, not Susan Rice, the other, the one that belongs to the Masters itself. Oh. I forget her name. She was in the Bush administration. But it's all just a uniparty, just all these disgraceful, awful uniparty people that it's supposedly.
Okay. Here's, and this is from Dr. Donna, which is actually, this is what I thought, Donna, this is a great analogy where she said, I tossed my love letters, my old love letters a long time ago. Why do you carry this kind of stuff around? Someone else has said of the people are commenting quick, that she was a better actor than Smollett.
Not much. No, I think those are real tears.
It's a love letter to herself.
Those are real
I know.
Tears. I mean, those
yeah,
are real
okay,
tears.
From Leo. She's not as good of an actor as Smollett, but just as much of a ward in our society. This is from Charlene, Madeline Kissinger, good duo. Steve says, where's Dan Quayle? Asking for Mike Pence. Exact from Sandra, all the members of the swamp. Ooh, Dr. Donna, she probably never got any love letters for Bill. So that one is meaningful. Well, it's just, like I said, it's kind of like, weird.
Self-pity.
Well, and not only that, it's not as if Hillary Clinton is like, you know, living a horrible life, right? I mean, she's got all kinds of money. She's got children, a child, grandchildren. She lives in a lifestyle most people would, and instead she's dragging around this 2016. I bet she reads that every day. I mean, I know that's mean of me to say, but I just read this and I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So anyway, thought we'd just
send
share that with you.
Send your condolences to Hillary and wait, yeah. Wait for the masterclass from Bill.
She's going to make a recording of it for Christmas. She can read it and you can buy it for Christmas. What else do we want to talk about? Oh, this is something else kind of cheerful too. Newest polls continue to be bad news for Democrats. This is a Wall Street Journal poll, right?
Yes.
On Hispanics. This is kind of funny too. I don't know if you guys have heard, there's this new, that's not that new term, Latinx. I guess it's how you pronounce it. Everybody I know who's Hispanic is like, we do not call ourselves Latinx. The only people who say Latinx are like white liberal women sitting around a Starbucks talking about how wonderful they all are. And I think that's probably true. But talk about the polls. You were the one who noticed this.
Well, it showed, you did say as Wall Street Journal, it's 37% would vote for Democrats, 30%, 7% for Republicans, and others weren't sure one way or the other. If Hispanics break 50-50, the Republicans will be in control for a long time. As a practical matter, let's say in Colorado. Colorado has a black population of 4%. And assuming, let's say they go,
and they all live in Denver.
And they all live
in Denver, largely.
Well, Aurora.
Yeah.
Metro area. But, you know, the Democrats usually get 90% of the black vote, which can be very important in states. But in Colorado, that still is only a couple of 3%. Hispanics are 21%. And if, you know, you really wonder, people say, well, Colorado's become a blue state. And it's always been my contention because they've rigged it with ballot harvesting. Although you can get the leader of the Republican Party, former leader, Ken Buck, going, it's a gold standard. I mean, it's just
You digress.
No, it's not. No, okay. It's not digressing at all. I mean, if Hispanics break 50-50.
Oh, yes.
Well, Democrats are over. It's over.
And bigger than,
I don't care how many people from 80.
And this is what I would submit. And hey, for the rest of the show too, you can, we'll read your comments. If you want to unmute yourself, go ahead and do that. And if you want to call in, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. I submit also that the bigger problem the Democrats have is why they're splitting, right? And they're splitting because just like that Hillary Clinton interview reveals, is the Democrats and their puppets in the media have no clue what people actually care about anymore, I think.
Well, they
and
think so they want keep... free stuff. So that's your view. They want free kindergarten. They want free community college. They want free Medicare. They want free...
Well, and they want people... Well, and they just... That's just a... Really, I think what it is the elites want to just control us all, and they'll throw us a few free bones, of stuff that, like you said, they'll go party. The servants at the party, they have to wear masks.
That's right.
But the politicians and the elites at the party don't. If you're Barack Obama, in the middle of a pandemic, you can have a giant party where no one wears a mask, and then what you do is you force all the celebrities to take their tweets down. I mean, that's the way of dealing with it. And people see that. And people see that the Democrats, they talk about, like I said, the BLM and the Jussie Smollett trial says, oh, this is just about a bunch of white supremacist charade, and saying it doesn't matter whether he's really guilty or not, because it's a court system that's oppressive. Therefore, he should be found not guilty. It's not looting in the stores, right? Yeah, it's just there. It's, I don't know what, righting a wrong. It's in California, they've changed the shoplifting law to like $1 million. And so stores are closing, places are pulling out. I mean, the Democrat, in the meantime, they're telling us it's your fault that inflation is existing. I mean, it's, they just
Rashida,
don't care.
This is from Senator Rashida Tlaib, wants us to pay her law school loan, which is about $70,000. She said, I can't believe you haven't paid for it yet. I mean,
Well, again, that's a Democrat world, right? Where you run up a debt and then you don't pay it. It's kind of like, I don't know where I came from. I paid for my education. My daughter paid. I paid for her education. What, she's going to pay it off when she's like 80? But again, the Democrats, and I think that's the thing with the Hispanics and some of the Blacks who are now no longer Democrats either, is that they care about the same thing everybody cares about. We're all actually pretty similar when you get right down to it. We care about our families. We care about our safety. We care about our kids' education. We care about stuff like, do the stoplights work? Little things, the things that get you through the day. Can I get, whatever it is I'm looking for at the grocery store? Are my kids' presents going to be here in time for Christmas? Stuff like that. And the Democrats, to them, that's a joke, right? That's not the world they live in.
Well, it's and it used to be very good back when you were a Democrat, Julia.
I know. I've evolved. Sorry.
Of hiding it. And you didn't realize they were hiding it. They've always been hiding it. They've always never said what they really want to do or why they're really doing things. It's always sound to be nice. You want equity.
Right.
You want a fair society. You want something that's good for everyone. We're not, they don't even know those things. They're just greedy, power hungry, awful people.
Well, it's been revealed. I think they just became overconfident. And I think they became, going back to John Conlon's interview, they became, the organism itself has grown to a place now where it's fighting to destroy us, who call for smaller government, who say, hey, maybe, I don't know, call us crazy. Maybe if we're at a pro-police rally and the Antifa people are attacking us, that the police should step in and stop them. I mean, I don't know, call me crazy. There are enough people out there saying, I don't want people, I'm not going to go to the store if they're going to loot it and ransack it. I'm not going to work at the store if they're going to do it. And crime does matter. And the Democrats keep trying to say, no, you're racist. They shout everything is white supremacist. Candace Owens is a white supremacist. Casper Stockham is a white supremacist. It's a meaningless phrase anymore.
Well, talking about that, Greg Lopez is going to be on Peter's show tomorrow at 7. So we'll give a little shout out for that. That ought to be an interesting tete-a-tete.
Yeah. Not that Greg's a white supremacist, but, or Peter.
We called him that jokingly.
Oh, okay. Because he was for election integrity. Well, I mean, anytime they say something you don't like, it's a white supremacist kind of thing. Right. What else did I want to talk about? Oh, this. This is because we don't have much time, but sort of switching gears. I was reading Breitbart today. They were talking about some economic statistics coming out, the Great Resignation. And they said that 4.2 million people quit their jobs in October. That's the third highest amount on record. The record was set in September when 4.4 million people quit their job. And then the previous time before that was August when 4.3 million people quit their job. So, I mean, what you've got like 13 million people in the last 3 months have quit their job. Truly, I am confused about this. What are these people doing? I mean, Why would you quit?
Some are being forced to because there are no vaccines.
Okay, vaccine mandates, which again, Biden's taking a trumping in the courts on that. Yeah, but I find it weird. Well, Prince Harry, of course, was telling us you should just quit your job if you don't find it fulfilling. You know, when I was my first job, I did tassel corn in Woodstock, Illinois. I did not find that fulfilling.
Yeah, well, neither Prince Harry traveling around the world being feted.
Right, in private jets. That was so hard. But,
well, this is what Stephen says. Why Greg Lopez going to Peter Boyle's show? He better stand with his back to the wall so he doesn't get stabbed in the back. Well, I think we've warned. I think
Greg's a pretty sharp guy.
Greg knows what he's in for.
You know, and just to, you know, stepping away from my, I was going to tell a corn to tasseling story, but but I think though that Greg is doing the right thing. And when we've had him on our show, and this is something I like about Greg, is he says what he thinks. And you might not agree with him, but he says what he thinks he's reasonable.
I mean, he is a long shot compared to Heidi Gunnall, who has all the money and all the rhinos behind her and stuff. So Greg has to take chances, and I think he'll handle himself well.
Well, and he's smart. I mean, he was talking about, you know, I mentioned earlier that Twitter, for some reason, canceled the number one Maxwell trial account that people were going to see what was going on in the Maxwell trial, the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. And Twitter just canceled it, saying it had violated their terms of
service.
Which is whatever that means.
I can't wait to.
But Greg was saying that he said sooner or later, he said they're going to cut down my Facebook page, they're going to cut down my Twitter. I know that. So I'm building an army of 30,000 people. They can't stop 30,000 people. And I think he's just smart about that kind of thing.
I think that's right. He'll do a good job. It'll be fun to watch.
Listen on Peter. Yeah, that's right. And this from Steven, surprising conservatives won anything. Emerge Colorado candidates endorsed by Emerge control the Aurora City Council until this election. They're hardened Bolshevik socialists from Emerge. Well, and Steven, that's what I'm saying. There's a little bit of hope, right? That people are waking up and the Democrat Party has become so overconfident and just so smug that they're not even trying. You know, they're showing their true face, and they think that they control us enough through election integrity and that kind of stuff, and just, you know, by canceling people and silencing people. But instead, I think they've gone so far overboard that it's having the other effect. People in Aurora, I suspect, just like in Douglas County, right? They were like, you know, they're probably not getting into this overly progressive Emerge, this or that. They're like, you know what? I want to have a say in what the curriculum is being taught in the schools. I want to have a say in whether my kid has to wear a mask to school or not. So they threw out the school board. Same thing in Aurora. They're like, you know, actually crime does matter. We want people to protect our societies, to protect our property.
I think people do realize what Emerge is, and also what Working Families Party is, which is out of New York City. It's a guy and he's a communist and he's Working Families Party. And if it's a woman, she's from Emerge.
In the Democrat Party.
Yeah, and she's also communist or socialist or whatever else there is. It's amazing stuff. What else you got there, Julie?
You know what? I want to play one thing, too, just to put a smile on your face, because Twitter is banning all of this. So I'm kind of making it my personal mission to try to spread the word far and wise. There was another, you know, the Let's Go Brandon, Let's Go Brandon. Okay, that's still kind of out there. We played for you the Let's Go Brandon song. Want to play you a little bit of a snippet of a vaccine mandate song. So Thomas, if we could please play the vaccine song.
Shove your vaccine mandates up your ass.
Apparently that is being played largely in Australia and in Europe, but all over the place too. And I think that's kind of funny. And again, that's just people, right? That's just people doing that. These, you know, like sort of like the Let's Go Brandon chant, right? It wasn't some kind of organized political effort. And it all ties into, you know, go ahead and show Hillary Clinton reading her victory speech.
Crying over her victory speech.
And everyone goes, oh, that's a great victory speech.
God. You lost, of course. What a human being.
Would have been a much better speech if he'd actually won and could give it as a victory speech. But hey, that's, you know, that doesn't bother. If you're a Democrat, the fact that you lost should not prohibit you from reading your victory speech when you get right down to it. It's kind of crazy. The other good news, too, though, is that we don't have time to get into this a lot, but the Trump social media. I don't know if you guys are following this. We were banned, months ago now.
Years ago, from YouTube.
Routinely shadow banned on Twitter and also Facebook polls stuff, get in Facebook jail. But the Trump Truth, what's it called? Trump's Truth Social Media, the Trump Media Social Media organization, which is interestingly, it hasn't even started yet. And already, seriously, the SEC is investigating it.
Right.
And what's happening there is they have merged with Rumble. I think you read Devin Nunes is going to be the CEO there. People are trying to make it sound like somehow that's a sign of Devin Nunes cutting and running. It's like, no, it seems to me
probably
that's
a pretty good job.
Yeah, Devin Nunes saying, I mean, they already got like $1 billion in investment. So this is not some fly-by-night organization. And I think, say what you will about Donald Trump, or in a lot of ways, the guy's a good businessman. But I think they're going to merge. It's been announced with Rumble, which is the YouTube alternative. Rumble is trickier. I mean, we're on Rumble, so I encourage you all, please, we'd love to have you listen and follow us on Rumble. It's free. It's just rumble.com, Chuck and Julie Show. It's exactly like YouTube. It's a little bit, if you're a content creator, it's not quite as content creator friendly, but I got a feeling they'll work on that. But they're dedicated to, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff there. They're dedicated to just free speech, free content creating, free not taking all of your money if you're making money off of it. So I think that that's a sign that I think something is really happening there and they're getting rolling on that. I think another thing I was hearing on Gab was saying this, that they had heard that Trump and those guys might take over Parler or get involved with Parler. So I'm not really sure about that. So
it's a slow process, but I think there are signs that it's a real process.
Exactly. And I think that's why Axios and all these other organizations are doing stories saying, oh, it's terrible, conservative media, what's wrong with them, you know? And we're much nicer. We were much nicer to Trump than we were to Biden. Biden's constantly getting attacked.
That's what's so great about the left. I mean, they really don't care what the truth is. They really don't care. I mean, Jesse Smollett can get up in the stand and just lie his ass off and you feel fine.
That's right. So, hey, listen, that's going to wrap it for us today on this Wednesday. We will thank you to John Conlon. Thank you to everybody on Zoom, the great guys at BBS. You can catch all of our shows at chuckandjulie.com. Hey, there's a link there too. We would love to have you subscribe to us. There's a link to BBS. It shows you how to do that. And if you want to sign up for our free newsletter, you can do that too. That'll do it for today. Party Friday
coming up. Boy, it comes fast.
Oh, it sure does. We'll see you, everybody. Have a great rest of your week.
Bye-bye.